problems that Mark may cause for the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. This is going to be a special show, and I'll tell you what. I brought in the heavy hitters. This is the heavy hitter show. We have got diesels covered, right?
Yep.
And we've got accessories, drivability concerns, tires, wheels, gears, exhaust, chips, programmers, air filters, questions about all of that.
Yep.
That's in your wheelhouse, right?
Yep.
Let me turn off the speakers so we sound better. And then I got Eddie Caruso, who really knows a little bit about lawnmowers, you think?
He knows basically everything else.
He does.
I do my best.
No. Eddie is a Ford extraordinaire that can cite chapter and verse on Fords. But he also did, the other day, we had a Jaguar come in. And every time the guy would touch the switch on the ceiling to close the convertible top.
Right, to open or close the top.
Right. It sprayed something on him.
Yeah.
So Eddie takes this. And what Jaguar model was that? It's a little two-door.
XK8.
Okay, XK8. So it had the big high-performance motor in it.
Right.
And so Eddie orders the lines that go from the switch across the windshield, down the A-pillar, underneath the carpet, over the hump, and into the back of the pump area.
Right, into the trunk.
Into the trunk. And those lines are how long?
Oh, stretched out straight, they're probably 15 feet.
Okay. Now, the problem is the customers are friends of mine. So Eddie has the entire interior and the A-pillar. And the A-pillar, folks, is the, as you're driving the car, it's the pillar that holds up the roof to your left side, your front left side. That's we call that the A-pillar, the pillar right behind
the windshield.
Yeah.
Holds the windshield.
It holds the roof up, too.
Yeah.
So the B-pillar is the pillar to your left shoulder right behind you.
And it goes
you.
On and on. So you have A, B, C, and D, depending on how big the vehicle is.
So he's got the interior gutted, no carpet, no seats, and half the dashboard is laying on the passenger side. So I take a picture, and I send it to the customer, and I say, Eddie just fell sick, and I'm not quite sure I have anybody to put this car back together. Is it okay if I don't give it back to you in 30 days? And she sends back a big question mark, and she says, I'm going to have to ask Kurt, which is the husband.
Yeah.
And so I tell her I'm teasing and stuff like that. But anyway, Eddie has tremendous skills. He's not going to tell you this, but we can give him anything, anytime, and he can fix it. He can find and fix it. He's pulled some amazing rabbits out of his hat. So we've got three guys here. You've been a master tech as long as I have.
Over 25 years.
Okay. Did you ever get your emeritus? Did you apply for it yet?
No, I still take them. I haven't retired from the testing yet.
The what?
The emeritus, where you can basically retire from ASE testing.
Oh,
and
wow.
You become retired, and you don't have to take the 5-year exam every year, all 8 tests that involve the master technician. But you still are a master technician. You still call yourself a master, because I ask him that.
That's right.
And so I took the emeritus position, so I didn't have to take the tests anymore. You know, I get enough experience just walking around the shop looking at you guys fix cars and make mistakes. So I've got a classroom environment all of my own. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, a motor home, I think we can handle boats. I think we can handle hot rods. We can handle Fords. We can handle diesels. No matter what you've got
Jim is your first caller, Jim.
Brain trust of our organization here. And Jim's up first. Jim, good morning to you.
Hi, Mark. How's it going?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Hey, I love your show. Plus, I love the little funny stuff you throw in there. So it's pretty entertaining and educational. So.
Yeah, I get in a lot of trouble for some of this stuff, I say. Did you hear last week by chance?
Yeah.
the comparison between a gynecologist and an auto repair technician?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I haven't heard if I got in trouble for that yet, but I'm leaving that thing alone today. Go ahead. What's up on your mind?
Well, I just went out. We have a 2002 Ford Power Stroke. It's a 7.3. Just had the oil changed, and the oil cap, the fill cap, it got green. It looks like someone poured green antifreeze in there. But the thing that's weird is he said it was low on the oil was low on the dipstick, which I guess we might have to look for a leak now, but... And the coolant is gold, but coolant level is right where it's supposed to be. So I would think if there was coolant in there, but, you know, if it got all the way up the bilge tube, you know, it wouldn't be green because it's not green coolant. So just trying to, and then I just turned on the show and I heard you guys did people, and I went, hey, cool. Let's see if what you guys think about that.
I don't think we have.
Are
we
you,
ever
are you talking about
that?
The oil filter cap, or are you talking
no,
about the oil
filler,
the
fill?
Cap. Oil fill cap. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's right in the threads. It looks like someone poured green antifreeze in it because it's green. It's not, I've never seen that before. And the guys at the shop said, "You know, why would it be green? You know, because like I said, the coolant's the gold. So just kind of weird."
Well, the only thing that comes to mind to me is that when we see that color, it's because someone has added a dye to the oil to try and identify a leak, but it doesn't sound like that's the case.
But well, usually that...
It could be because we did have a leak on the back of the intake manifold. It was leaking oil down the back of the motor. So maybe that's what they... Maybe they did do that.
But even then, I mean, we're adding... Eddie's right. I mean, I was thinking AC dye or oil dye, but, I mean, we literally add... You know, 3 tablespoons of dye to a 15-quart system, so it immediately turns black. It doesn't stay green.
And you're sure that the coolant in the radiator is not the same color?
Yep, it's gold.
Okay. Yeah. All right. It almost has to be dye. Yeah. I was thinking he had green in there. I was thinking maybe he had an upper hose clamp leaking or something like that and blowing it back on the oil filter cap, but none of that makes sense because his coolant is cold. And if you had a drivability problem, you'd have chocolate milk in your crankcase. So, and any time we have coolant into the crankcase, we have water into the cooling or oil into the cooling system sometimes. But I think I'd just clean the cap, drive 1,000 miles, and see what happens.
I really wouldn't worry about it, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know. Does it look more like, I mean, there's a different consistency between coolant and oil. Does it look like a water-based coolant? Or does it look more like an oil-based?
I didn't touch it, but it looks, I guess I was just looking at it. It's kind of because that. I don't know if this makes any sense, but it looks slippery.
Okay.
Is it still there? Yeah, when I get home, I'll get a paper towel and clean it off. And then I also had the guys, they had a Gatorade bottle, so we filled it with oil so I could maybe have it tested to see if there's something weird in the oil.
Okay. Well, I think what I would do is if you took a Q-tip, before you wipe it off on your white towel, take a Q-tip and get a good lick on it and put it underneath water. Because if it's cooling, it's going to rinse off the Q-tip. If it's not coolant and it's oil, then it's just going to do nothing. And if you rub it on your fingers from the Q-tip and you put your fingers under the water, if it beads off, then it definitely is oil. And then it sounds like we all agree that it's going to be some kind of a dye that somebody put in the oil and it's still there.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
All right.
Good. Okay, thanks, guys.
You
have
betcha.
A good day. Merry Christmas.
And
you
same
too.
To you.
To you.
Thank you very much. That's probably the first time we've ever got any question like that. We've never even had a gas motor complain about that kind of stuff when we add dye.
No.
And are we using different colored dyes for different applications, or are we using an orange or a green?
Well, for all the petroleum fluids, so whether it's transmission fluid, power steering, or engine oil, it's the same dye.
Okay. So what color is that going to show up?
It's I'd say a fluorescent green to a bright yellow.
Okay. All right. And you have to have special glasses to see it.
Yeah, you wear a pair of amber glasses.
And you have to have a black light to identify the oil.
Right.
And so how successful are we when we have an oil leak in using dye, putting on the funky glasses with the black light, and how long is that? We put the oil in on Monday. When do we bring the car back?
It really depends on the severity of the leak.
Okay.
Sometimes we can find it after adding the dye and cleaning off the area and running the vehicle for half an hour or an hour.
Okay. All right.
And the good part about the dye is if it's a massive leak and there's oil everywhere and you can't spend an hour to clean every nook and cranny, once you put the dye in, it shows up totally differently from the oil that already came out.
So
that oil didn't have dye in it.
Okay. So the guy's bleeding, and he's bleeding from his head, and his whole body's covered with blood. You don't really know where it's at. But when we put dye in it, we can see the cut on the head. Boom. We're
right.
Done. And it's quick and easy, and we don't have to wash him up.
Right.
Okay. You use it on the diesel side as well?
Mm-hmm.
For oil leaks and stuff? All right.
Yep.
So what other possibilities? We have Freon. We have dye for Freon.
Right. And that's a different.
Okay. Now, we inject that into the air conditioning system.
Correct.
Right? And what color does it look like after you're done?
It's a stronger green. It's more of a real lime green versus what we see with the petroleum-based dye.
Okay. And so we're using that in the Freon in the air conditioning system. And the only thing I can think, we have coolant. That's the only thing that's left.
Right.
And you and we would use a different kind of dye for the coolant?
We don't have a
dye. We don't use dye for the coolant.
It's a pressure test usually.
Okay, and I'm getting that. I'm asking the questions they're thinking.
Yeah.
And so on a pressure test, you look at the cap and it says 16 pounds. So what do you pressure test it at?
2 pounds over whatever the rated at.
18.
Okay. All right. So we're going to pressure test the cooling system. We're going to take the cap off. We're going to put a new adapter on there. We're going to have a hand pump with a gauge. We pump it up to 18 inches, and we walk away. Mm-hmm. Now, when we come back and it's dropped to 10, what are you looking for?
The coolant on the ground first.
Okay. But where else does the coolant could be that people aren't going to, we aren't going to see it on the ground?
Oh, in the crankcase.
Okay.
Or combustion chamber.
Okay. Crankcase with the oil. Okay. Or the combustion chamber, which would come out of the tailpipe. Or the floor on the passenger side where the heater core could leak.
That's right. Yeah.
So we have to look in all of those areas for the loss of water. Now, here's the good news. The good news is if you pressure test it to 18 pounds and you don't see anything on the floor or the passenger side, you don't see anything around the engine, if it's a combustion chamber leak, when you start it up, are you going to know right then?
Typically, for one, you're going to have a misfire.
Yeah.
And then you're going to see excessive steam
coming out of the
tailpipe.
Okay, that's what I'm kind of driving at. Once we pressure test it, we can test it for a head gasket real quick. Because if we've got a loss of coolant, then we're going to have a misfire because we didn't fill, but we've got water in at least one cylinder. There was a cowboy up in Payson the other day that bought a truck, and they told him that it had a blown head gasket. And so he brought it over, and I happen to have a pressure tester, so I pressure tested in the thermostat housing on this V6, 2.8-liter little Ford Ranger truck?
Maybe a 3-liter?
3-liter, yeah. And it has a thermostat housing that bolts to the front of the intake and stuff like that, and it just all warped. And when you go buy them, they're $184, but the guy goes, we sell millions of these. So it was leaking there. So he popped it off, put a new one on, and the old one was broken, and put it all back together. And he's been driving it now for 2 months. It hasn't lost a drop of coolant, and they had diagnosed it as a bad head gasket. So they didn't do the pressure test, or they'd have known that. So the pressure test is somewhat easy. Basically, what do we charge for what does the industry charge for a pressure test?
$40.
Okay. Somewhere around there?
That's
okay.
Right.
All right. So 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, we'll give it our best shot. 602-508-0960. Eddie Caruso sitting to my left. Alan Salem to my right. Both of them have expertise in diesels. And Eddie's a master tech and has been for 25 years. And I think you worked for me for 28 years.
Yeah, coming up on 29.
29. So anyway, Eddie and I have been around the block a few times, and I'm going to tell you unequivocally, he knows more about cars than I do. So we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour. My name is Mark Salem, Eddie Caruso, Alan Salem. We're all here to help you. 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Auto Repairs at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's a really good guy. He's been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. Bob is one of the best diagnosticians I've met. He's one of those gray-haired guys that just wait. You wave the red flag and tell him nobody else can fix this, and he'll do the magic. Nevertheless, 38th Avenue and Indian School, if you live in that area, I would suggest you have an oil change there and get to know those folks. But if you have a car that nobody else can fix and you've had it to a variety of places, I would take it to Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Tom, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning. I've got a 99 Windstar, and I just had a new fuel pump put in it. But the pressure's building up in the fuel tank, and it seems like it's blowing by the gas cap, which was what I've identified, just sounds like a big bunch of gas being relieved.
Eddie.
Is that just the gas cap, or is there excess pressure in the...
Do you know when they replaced the fuel pump, did they have to remove the fuel tank?
Yes, they did.
Okay, it sounds like
it
maybe on
past
the
week.
On the reinstallation of the fuel tank, they pinched one of the vapor lines or line for the fuel tank, and so it's not able to release the pressure that's in the tank back to the canister or up to the engine to be consumed through the canister purge valve.
It's a problem you got now that they gave you, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
And when it hasn't relieved itself before it blows out, I pop the cap, and, man, just seems like an excessive amount of pressure coming out of there.
Okay.
So that's what you're suggesting?
Well, there's two things. Number one, we're supposed to suck the vapors off the fuel tank and burn them. So we're going to suck the vapors off the tank, run them forward, run them through the engine, and send them out the tailpipe. So there's that loop. But more important than anything else is you didn't have this problem before, right?
Correct.
So if it was coming to our shop and we did that, then it would be up to us to diagnose it because of this reason. We can't say it's not our fault till we know what it is. So if all of a sudden we find the canister's plugged up, then we say, okay, well, the canister's the problem, and in order to prove it, we replace the canister, send you on your way, and if everything's okay, you come back and pay for the canister. But if you didn't have this problem before, and it's not going to be a gas cap, if you didn't have this problem before and now you have it, it's more likely than not that that was created during the Now, the shop that did the fuel tank, was it a transmission-focused shop or a brake-focused shop?
It was actually a pretty reputable shop.
Okay.
It's funny, when I went to fill up, I turned around and looked out, and the ground was covered with gas. I dumped about 3 gallons of gas on the thing, called the fire department and everything. Somebody else, the tanker guy, had the stuff to wipe it up. And the fireman came, and he looked on there and said, man, they forgot to reconnect the hose from the fuel into the tank. So he connected it. And when I topped off the tank, it ran again. So I got under there, and there's a second little rubber tube that I connected. But it didn't have a clamp on it. So
okay. Well,
would it have anything to do with those two hoses right there? They're both coming right off the tank, parallel.
Well, one that you described was the fill hose. So you're putting the fuel in the...
Yes.
In the fill neck, and it's just running on the ground because that hose is not attached to the fuel tank. And then sometimes there's an external or an internal vent hose, so when you're filling the tank and you're displacing all the air that's in the tank, it comes back up through the fill neck, and that's why the nozzles at the gas tank have a vapor recovery on them as well. So when you're putting fuel in there, you have to displace the air, and the air comes back up through the fill neck.
And we're sucking the air through a filter and stuff like that. So if you never had this gas leak before, and it looks like it's the filler neck hose, and he said it's missing the clamp, there has to be a good connection in the filler neck on the top to the filler and on the bottom to the tank, right?
Right, but
I tightened that up, and the little one I found was still off, which is why it overflowed when the tank filled.
Okay.
And I just put it on, but it did not have a clamp, which is the return one that I think you're talking about.
All right. Well, I haven't changed my mind. You need to go back to them, and they need to readdress this. Because if what you're describing is their responsibility, that's all there is to it. It's their responsibility. No matter who they are, even if you're talking about my shop, it's our responsibility. We made a mistake. So you just take it back to them and have them take care of it. Anyway, thanks, Tom. Thank you very much. That was a good question. Dan, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you. Hey, I've got a 1948 Willys CJ2A. When I start it up, cold start, it blows kind of a black liquid out of the tailpipe. And I've got to the point where I have to push it out into the driveway before I start it so it doesn't blow this black stuff all over the wall in my carport. So,
what do you think, Eddie?
Well, what it is when the engine is cold, it's running on the choke, so we've increased the air-fuel ratio. We're making it run rich so it starts easier and it runs when it's cold. That's the black, but the liquid is just the vapor from the engine. As it's, when you start a cold engine, there's condensation that's been left over in the exhaust, and there's condensation that's created on a cold start on an engine. So that's where you're getting that black mixture. Does it run okay when you start it cold? Will it start and idle by itself?
It does, yep.
Okay.
Yep. I do have to let it warm up for a little bit because if I try to push the accelerator down before it's warmed up, it kind of stalls out a little bit.
Okay, well, the proper procedure real quick is turn the key on. That doesn't make any difference on your 48 Willy, but on other cars it does. Turn the key on. Right. You pump the throttle 1, 2, 3 times and let go of the throttle. And then you hit the key and it starts and it stumbles for a second and then it revs up. And that means the choke is shut, or almost shut, and the fast idle cam has been lifted. And it's at that point that you just let it sit. But let me ask you a question, Eddie.
Yeah.
What about if he didn't have a weep hole in that muffler, or the muffler had a problem with the weep hole? And would the muffler have the condensation so when he starts it up he's blowing black out the tailpipe? Otherwise, wouldn't there be some dirty water on the ground if the weep hole was there or should have been there?
Yeah, it depends, yes, and also it depends how long it's been since the last time he drove it. I mean, if it sits for 3 weeks, any moisture in the exhaust system is going to be evaporated by then.
And this is the time for this to happen, because this is not going to happen from April through August, probably.
No, it's, you know, you start your car, no matter what type of car it is, and you drive away from your house, and you get to the first stoplight, and you see everyone, the tailpipes are blowing steam out.
Right. Right. In this time of year.
Right, in this time of year.
In this time of year.
It's just like when you see your breath when it's cold outside.
Okay. So I think the answer is I would look at the weep hole on the muffler and see there's a small weep hole at the very bottom of the seam of the muffler, and I would hope that it would be open. I'd probably take compressed air and blow backwards in it, and if not, I probably... But see, here's the problem. You got it coming out of the tailpipe onto the ground and messing up the driveway, or you can have it weeping out of the stupid muffler and dropping on the ground, and you're still messing up the driveway.
Right, and it's, you know, it's just the nature of the beast. We're talking something that's 70 years old.
Yeah, and not only that is catalytic converter cars don't have necessarily this problem. The newer model cars don't have this problem, because this, we would have guessed if it's a really old car. Nevertheless, when we come back, John, you'll be our first caller. The lines are open. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And like I said, John, if you'll stay right there, I'll be back with you in about 3.5 minutes. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 3 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and Eddie Caruso and Alan Salem are sitting here next to me. Real quick, though, let me tell you about Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is up north off the I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. They're a They're a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop, and they have really good technicians. They're dedicated in providing the best service possible while getting the job done right the first time. So that means diagnostic and repair, and then verification of the repair is correct. They work on both foreign and domestic light diesels, and they also are open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and they also sell parts online 24 hours a day at their website. So if you're looking for diesel parts or willing to just look and see what's available for your truck, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is the place I would go. Let's go, John. Good morning to you, buddy. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Hey, I've got an 07 Highlander. Took it to have an oil change, and they sent me back home with a list of about $1,800 worth of repairs that it really didn't need. One of them was the front struts, though. They're telling me they're leaking and they should be replaced. And so I got under there and looked, and they're as dry as a bone. But my question is, it's got 90,000 miles on it. When should they be replaced? And where can I find an honest shop in, let's say, Goodyear area?
Okay. Let's comment, because we're all sitting here smiling.
Yeah, there is no certified time or mileage to replace them. It's, you know, it's obvious defects. Yes, if they're leaking, the quality of the ride has diminished. But
right.
There is no set schedule for replacing them.
Okay.
Right.
And then I want to also comment on, you took it in for an oil change and got an $1,800 estimate. This morning, I saw on television that somebody's got a tire rotation and an oil change for $1,695.
Right.
I'm looking at these two guys. Wake up.
Okay.
That is, bring your car in here, and we're going to give you a really good deal, and we are going to hunt down every defect, or maybe every defect, and we're going to look at your odometer, and you're going to get a list of stuff that needs to be done based on our idea of what you need at 90,000 miles. And then, boy, do I my pants wadded up
tell.
On this.
This is a pretty reputable place.
I don't care either. Yeah. I'll tell you what. If one of my guys did that, they would be unemployed in about 2 seconds. It's just like the other day.
Right.
A lady calls me or sends me an email. She's pulling up to the booth, and this lady walks out and says, "Ma'am, you don't know it, but you've got bad motor mounts. So let me ask you a question as I look you in the eye. You're standing outside, and some lady pulls up and applies her brakes and puts it in park. What's the chances, you, Mr. Master Tech, and me, that we're going to know she has bad motor mounts?"
Zero.
Zero. And it's a minus zero. So she says, "Well, how do I know?" And I said, "Well, there's specific symptoms," and I explained them to her. But I said, "You need to go someplace else, because that's upselling at its worst. That's our industry at its worst." To answer your question, I got a comment about what Eddie said. I agree. There's no time frame. The deterioration of the ride, though, is going to be gradual, so it's going to be kind of hard to tell. But I can tell you this much. It's not everybody we put struts on, if I ask them, they say, yes, better, much better. But then I say, was it worth the thousands of dollars for us to put struts on all four corners of your car? And the answer is no. So you need two front. Shoot a number at me.
Well, it depends on the vehicle. But it's
Highlander.
Okay.
Ahead.
Two front struts, labor and alignment,
$600. Six to 1,000.
Yeah. Six to 1,000. I would go with that. Six to 1,000.
Depends on if it needs mounts.
Minutes.
Or upper strut mounts.
Okay. So tell, did they separate the struts in your $1,800?
Yeah, I think it was like 1,000.
Okay. And maybe they're assuming that we're going to do mounts.
Right, strut mounts.
Strut mounts. So we're going to do struts, and if they have two struts and two upper mounts in case they need them, then they've also got an alignment, and they've also got sales tax, shop supplies, and environmental charges. Then they're on the top end of the scale that we're guessing. And keep in mind, we're just guessing. So it's up to you. If you got underneath there and they're not leaking oil and they're not broken and they're not making noise and they're not knocking and they're not squeaking and your front tires aren't scalloped, can you think of any other symptoms, Eddie?
No, noises sometimes.
Exactly. So,
but going back,
the only thing I noticed was the rubber boots are torn.
Well, those are just dust shields. So they keep the dirt and stuff away from the seal.
Right.
But going back to that $16 oil change, how much is the technician making? You know, he's making $2. He has to upsell if he wants to make any money.
Well, not
to earn
only
a living.
That, but it, regardless of how much even he's making, at $16, no matter what they're putting in your car, they're losing money.
They're losing money.
Period.
I can't put conventional in there. I got 5 quarts of conventional oil. I got an oil filter. I got to pay the technician. I'm into it for more than $16.
They're not in business for a $16.95 oil change. I promise you that. Well, they're not staying in business.
Yeah. So
it's $35.
No, I'm using my example, though.
And
to be honest with you, our semi-synthetic, we quote out at $40, $41 out the door.
That's right.
As on a semi-synthetic, and I think we're $75 to $95, depending on the quartz, on a synthetic. On a full synthetic. And I'm going to admit publicly that I'm not making a whole lot of money on oil changes. And it's a convenience. It's people expect oil changes. We're supposed to provide oil changes. But there's two kinds of shops, maybe three. One shop has a requirement that you have to upsell so many dollars based on what you do or what the shop does. Some shops say, you know, really look for the stuff that's obvious and needs to be done. And then some shops say, there is no requirement. Get the doggone car fixed. Handle their focus and give them some soft sale. Hey, you know, John, you're probably looking at some struts sometime in the future. I'm going to give you a number for them. They're not quite leaking oil yet, but I'm looking at your odometer. It's 90,000 miles. You've been around the world 3 times, so I'm going to give you some numbers, and maybe one of these days if you want to improve the ride, then stop by and we'll throw some struts on there. That sounds a lot hoping. Oh, by the way, John, you're not going to die if one of these struts goes bad. Unless, of course, it falls off and you're going to crash. But anyway, that's kind of the way our industry works.
Where can I find an honest shop in the West Side?
I would go to S&S Tire. I would drive in there and I would say to them, I got 90,000. I'd like to know exactly what it would cost for two front struts mounted and alignment and all that kind of stuff. And they're on they're south of the I-10 off Dysart Road. They have 3 locations in the West Valley, and I can tell you that they are a good, honest shop.
I think I know where that is. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, John. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
You got 602-508-0960. It's really tough in the beginning of a 2-hour show to get my panties wadded up this tight. You know what I mean? It's $1,800 worth
running.
Of work. And what sense does that make? You know me. You've been around me 28 years. The line is danger and not. This is going to cause you to break down. This is going to cause you some problems. This is going to wear your front tires. Safety issues.
No.
Everything else isn't. So, I mean, when was the last time somebody broke down because they didn't change their transmission fluid right at 60,000 miles? You know what I'm saying?
So it's we don't see that.
Well, no, we don't see that. We don't see that kind of stuff. When was the last time somebody was towed in because their struts were leaking oil?
Never.
So, I mean, and if they're really bad, they're going to scallop the tires. There's going to be, and there could be knocking noises. We get a lot of noises. You had a car in the other day. The nut wasn't all the way down, but it was stripped on that strut.
That was a cartridge strut. So, the cartridge goes inside the strut. So, I think someone assembled it incorrectly because the cartridge had been replaced by someone else.
Okay. So he takes it and has the cartridge done. Then he brings it to us because he wants us to wave our magic wand and fix the problem they made.
That's right.
Okay. Well, good. We're really good at that. 602-508-0960. Give us a call if you have a question. We'll be back. All righty. Welcome back, everybody. 46 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, Eddie Caruso, master technician. I'm also a master technician. And then we got Alan Salem, who is a master of diesels and
accessories.
And accessories and a little bit of manure from the bovine.
What are you doing? Sliding over towards me.
Well, I want you to get your mic closer to your mouth. It's sitting over there. Did you hear Gil?
What?
Gil's the engineer. He speaks in our ears. All right, let me tell you about Action Auto Repair. I-17 and Deer Valley. Last week, somebody called in and said a bunch of really nice things about Action Auto. He took his car in there. They treated him with respect. They found his problem. They fixed his problem. And I cut that out of the show and send it to the owners of the shop to let them know that there's people that do appreciate him. If you live in the North Phoenix area, the Deer Valley area, the North Phoenix area, Tom's been at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner, by the way, since 1983. He's got a BMW Master Tech there, and they have all the skills and all the equipment necessary. And did you guys both know that on the new BMWs, there is no owner's manual?
They give it to you in CD now?
No. They as far as intervals and maintenance, it's all based on the computer. Every aspect of your service is based on the computer. So let me ask you a question while we're talking about this. What's the possibility that someone might not fudge what the computer said?
Oh, no one ever does that.
Okay, that's the answer I was looking for. But anyway, Tom at Action's a good guy. We haven't had any complaints about him. I-17 in Deer Valley. And he has a BMW guy, but he also does everything else. Chevy, Ford, Toyota, Chrysler, Plymouth, Dodge. And I think he'll even work on some Fords. I'm not quite sure, but I think he will. You know what else BMW has?
What's that?
They have a pyrotechnic device on the positive battery cable. So when the car is involved in an accident, they blow the positive cable off of the battery to make sure that you don't catch fire.
I've heard of that.
Okay. And let me ask you a question. You and I have been in this business a long time. Other than in the news, and including the news, I'll say that, including the news, how many times have you seen or heard about somebody being burnt in their car?
After a collision?
Yeah.
It's very rare.
Very rare. Very rare. I've never had a case like that where an insurance company said, why did this car catch fire or whatever. But anyway, they disable it. So here's how the story goes. A lady's in California. She's on a 7-lane freeway, and she's in the middle lane. So she's got 3 on her left and 3 on her right. Traffic is stopped. A pickup truck comes in behind her and hits her. Not enough to deploy the side curtain airbags or any of the airbags, but hits her. The truck leaves the scene. So she's stranded in the middle of the highway. Traffic begins to move, and as soon as she's involved in this accident, BMW comes on her entertainment system and says, Mrs. Salem, are you okay? Are you hurt? I can send help. We know that you've just been involved in an accident. And for 37 seconds, this lady says, my car won't start. I need to get off the road. My car won't start. I need to get off the road. Why won't my car start? And they're talking to her about, you know, we're sending help. We've got the ambulances coming and, you know, tow trucks and all that kind of stuff. 37 seconds later, the connection goes away. A limousine hits the back of her car at 70 miles an hour and kills her. And the reason she couldn't get her car off the road is because it blew the positive cable off of it. Now, I'm sitting here thinking, well, how were they talking to her over her cloud connection?
Right.
They have to have an auxiliary circuit to do that because you can't blow the positive battery cable off of it and expect to have anything work, but they have to have an auxiliary system.
Right. They're blowing the high current positive cable.
Yes.
They're still using some low current to run the communications.
Exactly.
In the vehicle.
But they're not using that low current to run the fuel pump or anything like that. So I don't know. If I knew that the only circuit on that car was so they could talk to me, and the police are not real happy about this because there's time the police need to get the car off the road as well. And they need to be the ability, to, if it'll start and run, to get it off the road. So anyway, I don't know where this is going to go. I called a couple of body shops and I said, hey, what's the deal? Do you know this? And this is what they said. Oh, yeah, it happens all the time. Said, you get a BMW here and you're going to do a repair in an accident and it won't start, it won't move, it won't crank, it nothing. Nothing, no headlights, no nothing. And then we find out that it's got this pyrotechnic device on the positive cable that blows the cable apart. And then you have to buy that entire assembly to put it back on the car. So that's part of the repair.
Yeah, and there's got to be some way that obviously the body shops can bypass that on a limited basis just to move the vehicle before they actually have to replace it.
Most of them told me that we don't even know it won't start until after we're done with a lot of our body work because we push it around on dollies. So we can unlock the steering with the key, but that's it. So when the car's ready to deliver or we're ready to drive it into the paint, it doesn't start. That's when we usually find it. Now, I wasn't aware that that's how they moved cars around, but nevertheless, that's what many of them said. So the issue is this is a safety device. So I don't know why you... I don't know if I'd want that. Would you want that on your car?
I wouldn't. I mean, they call it a safety device, but in this case, it had the opposite effect.
Right. It had unintended consequences.
Yes.
There's no question about that. So I think from a practical point of view, there's a lot of reasons you can die in your car. Having a collision at 60 miles an hour is one of them. No matter what airbags you got in there, that one's going to hurt. But catching fire in your car in an accident, unless you're completely incapacitated, unless you're already seriously injured, I don't know.
Yeah, the only times I've heard of it is when there needed to be extraction from the vehicle. They needed the jaws of life to get the person out of the vehicle, but the vehicle was on fire.
Well, but the thought process, I think, is that if they kill the fuel pump, then there is no fire. That's the thought process. But I suggest to you that a lot of times why there's gasoline around those crashes because the fuel tank has been compromised. So we've crushed the fuel tank. We're squeezed fuel out of it. We've damaged it in the collision. The fuel pump's not going to have anything to do with that.
Right. They've created a fuel leak, whether it's up in the engine compartment or in the rear of the vehicle.
Right.
They've exposed fuel. But
right.
You can also have fires from a battery being shorted.
Absolutely.
In a collision.
And here's the thought, too. Now, you're an expert, and you're hired to go look at this BMW. Are you going to be able to tell if the fuel pump ran and caught the car on fire or if the fuel tank was compromised? Are you going to be able to tell that definitively? Are you going to be able to swear to that when all you've got is a burnt car, burn up, and nothing else?
It depends on the severity of the burn. And okay. The first thing, obviously, you have to do is locate the origin of the fire.
Right. And we wouldn't do that as mechanics,
right.
But they have CNO guys, cause and origin guys, and they say, okay, the fire started right here. That's where we jump in and say, okay, what's
there? This is
there?
What's around here, exactly.
That's, okay. So really and truly, the only time we see fires right now, in my opinion, is when the gas tank has been compromised, and it almost always involves somebody running over the top of a car in front of them. And the gasoline fills, and then the sparks are created by the crash. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the thought process is, but I'll tell you one thing. In the next couple of years, depending on how many lawsuits, they'll either have it or they won't.
Yeah, they're going to have to rethink that
that's
idea.
Right. That they're going to have to think that idea, especially after this one. And when that 37 minutes of video or 37 seconds of audio tapes comes out where this lady's obviously pretty frantic and doesn't want to be in the car, but she wants to start it up and drive it off the side of the road or at least merge into traffic, then that's going to be something different. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Up north, Kurt's Auto Repair is on Bell and the I-17 in the northeast corner. It's a family-owned, operated auto repair shop. They have three masters there. Kurt is a master technician. Jeff is a master technician. And Eric is a master technician. Now, there's a generation dividing those, because Kurt and I are the older generation, and the young bucks, Eric and Jeff, are the new generation. And both of those guys are really good technicians. So if you live near I-17 and Bell, then I would be proud if you would at least try Kurt's for an oil change and see how they treat you. He's been around since 1987. He services both domestic and import vehicles, both gas and diesel. I already told you he has ASE Master Certification, certified technicians. That's kind of important. You certainly don't want some three-whiskered kid born 16 or 17 years ago pulling the timing cover off your Ford because you've got a corroded bolt And inside that cover is a dual overhead cam with adjustable timing and all the sensors that go along with it. That's probably going to be a situation you don't want to be involved in. Well, at Kurtz, you don't have to worry about that because those guys are seasoned and they've been there before. And like all the rest of us, if it's beyond our capability, we tell you. Anyway, Kurtz Automotive, I-17 and Bell. 602-508-0960 if you'd like to join us. We're going to be back at the top of the hour here. And we're going to take car questions all through the 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock hour. So if you'd like to join us, you certainly can. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You got any other comments? Do you like the idea of safety devices in general? Do you see them work?
Yes, I do. Cars have evolved. I mean, you know, let's go back from the beginning. When we started off with first no seat belts, then seat belts, then we had collapsible steering columns, and then we came into
bumpers, 5 mile an hour bumpers,
right, absorbable bumpers, and then anti-lock brakes and airbags and
explosive devices that sucked you into the seat belts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the passive restraints that
exactly
that fire off and cinch your seat belt.
They just strap you in. They take all the slack up. It's like a fishing reel that went on steroids. So your safety yeah. belt's like a fishing reel. And all of a sudden, and it winds you up and sucks you in. So let me ask you a question. Think about this. You're an accident reconstructionist. When do you know if the driver was in the seatbelt or not?
Well, if it's got a passive restraint on the seatbelt, it's obvious. Because if they weren't wearing the seatbelt, that strap from the shoulder going down to the floor is just going to be taut. It's as tight as it can be, which tells us they weren't wearing the seatbelt.
Okay. Is there any physical evidence that would tell you whether the driver was wearing a seatbelt?
Oh, there should be bruising on that person.
From the left shoulder,
right.
From the right shoulder all the way down to the left hip. No question
right.
about it. If you find the driver outside the vehicle, does that definitively say that they had their belt on or not?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. But
I mean, it depends on the type of crash, too.
Okay, but if the driver's found outside the vehicle and the seatbelt's buckled, either he was sitting on it or he came out of it. But if the driver's found outside the vehicle and the seatbelt's not buckled, then you have to come to the conclusion it wasn't on.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things that these accident recon guys have to deal with. They look for bruising. They look where the belt was at. They look at the black box because it'll tell you whether the belt was snapped or not. They'll
right.
tell you that there's a butt in the seat and the belt was on. I don't know that I've ever seen one lie about that. But the real problem is on the accident reconstruction side is when the driver says that he had his belt on, what are the signs that he had his belt on? And bruising is certainly one of them. Black box data is another. So 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open. Eddie Caruso, Alan Salem, Mark Salem, we're here at your service. So just give us a call, 602-508-0960.
To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here for another hour, and I'm going to do business because we got callers right now, and we've got four lines that are hooked right now, and one that's open, 602-508-0960. The only shop in Mesa that I say you should go to is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They've been in Mesa since 1970. I think they're on their second generations of owners and operators. They have ASC certified technicians. They really keep good track of your vehicle and when it's due for service based on the owner's manual. So it's real easy and convenient to keep your vehicle in good shape at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're located on Main Street just east of Stapley. Let's go to the phones. Tom, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, I've got a 2014 Toyota 4Runner. I bought used from a Toyota dealer, and it has been certified by a Toyota dealer. And they and my shop here, I'm in Sun City West, my shop out here, real good guy, I trust him especially. They both tell me that the right rear shock is leaking. Not severely, but is leaking. And I got a question. Should I have that changed now, or when should I have it changed? What should I do with it?
How many miles are on the vehicle?
About 40. Not quite 40, I think.
You said it's a 4Runner?
Yes.
It doesn't have any of the X package on it, right, with the hydraulic shocks or anything like that?
I don't know if it's got hydraulic
shocks. How much did they quote you?
Then nobody quoted me anything. They just said that the certification came with a
caveat
warranty. Yeah, warranty, and they just said they don't. It won't be covered. It's not that bad.
Okay. Well, the fact that they didn't give you a number tells me that it's not that bad, right?
I would think so.
Yeah.
But some of those 4Runners had shocks, and the shocks were manufactured by Yamaha.
Okay.
And so they linked the left front with the right rear and the right front with the left rear.
Okay.
And
those
you're
are
talking
very expensive.
Big dough.
All right. So, but if we were going to do it, and let's say it's not the crisscross effect where we're linking right front with left rear, then he should do them in pairs, in my opinion.
Yeah,
he should do them in pairs.
Kind of industry standard. You always do shocks or struts in a pair on one axle.
And you have to use the right word from now on. This is called ride control. Okay, everybody understands it as ride control. But I think the answer here is unless you got the top end shocks where you're linked, you know, corner to corner, I think I wouldn't do anything at 40,000 miles. If it were my car or my wife's car, and I do love my wife, I wouldn't do the two rears until I had a reason. And obviously they're not real concerned about it because they didn't even give you a number. So I would think, no, just keep going. And if you see the right rear tire start scalloping, then, yes, we need to address it. But until you see abnormal wear on that right rear tire, then I'd leave it alone. Okay?
Okay. All right. All right. Thank you very much.
You betcha. Thank you very much for your call. Curtis, you're up next. How can I help you? Hello, Curtis?
Yes. Hello.
Go right ahead, sir.
I listen to you every Saturday. I have a 2009 Honda CRV, and I take very good care of it because I drive for Lyft all around the city, and I listen to you while I'm driving for Lyft.
Thank you.
Okay. When I'm driving down the highway, say 50 miles an hour, and I want to hit the gas and speed it up, I get a vibration in my car. Just started a week ago.
Okay, and it only does it on hard throttle up, right?
Yep, hard throttle up, doing about 50 or 60 or whatever.
And where do you feel the vibration? In the seat of your pants, in the steering
wheel,
on the floor?
No, through the whole car. Through the whole car.
Well, that's something that I think we're going to have to drive, because you had us hook, line, and sinker until you said it was shaking the whole car. Typically, that if the vibration is in the back of the car, it shakes all the car. If it's in the front of the car, it shakes the steering wheel or the floorboard for the driver. Agree?
No, it doesn't shake the steering wheel.
Okay. All right. So it's, I think what I would do is if you like your shop and you trust him and you're real happy with him, then not on Monday morning or Friday afternoons for obvious reasons, but I would call him and say, can I take you for a ride? I won't have you for longer than 10 or 15 minutes. I'm not going to kidnap your top technician for an hour while I drive around and show him this vibration 40 times and just have him go drive with you. Eddie, Alan, what's the possibility that you drive this thing and you know what it is?
80%. Well,
I wouldn't shoot that high. I'd say maybe 60.
Hold on. Maybe not down to the exact component, but we could drive it and tell you it's either suspension-related, drivetrain-related, or tire-related.
Or motor mount-related.
Or motor mount-related.
Right, yeah.
I think I couldn't say right front shock, you know, that, with that much certainty.
All right, I'm with you. I'll agree to that.
Okay.
I'll agree to that.
Okay.
But it's imperative that they drive with a technician so the technician can duplicate it and know exactly what the customer's concern is.
And because of that, it's because people tell us that they got a noise, a vibration. We always fix the wrong noise in the vibration. So we have come to the conclusion that unless you're willing to take one of our guys and show them how to make the noise, show them how to make the vibration, then we're going to wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Because we just fix too many wrong. Oh, well, we heard this noise. Well, you didn't fix mine. Oh. And it's always that way.
It never fails. You know, if a customer cannot take a technician for a ride or they do a night drop where we can't ride with the customer and hear the noise, the technician takes the car out and says, okay, which one of these five rattles is the one that's annoying them?
And you're right. And if it doesn't happen, then we're still in the same boat that we were before. And there's just all these things. Let me ask you this. If the customer takes you for a ride, how much diagnostic time do they save themselves?
Oh, typically at least an hour.
And so let's put it in a dollar value.
$120.
Exactly. At least, not at least, that's the top end.
Yeah.
But they're at least going to save $40, $50, $60, $70, up to $125 if they can just teach you how to make it happen. because that makes it all together different. Anyway, Curtis, thank you very much. That was a great question, and hopefully we gave you a good answer. Steve, how can we help you today?
Hey, Mark, how are you today?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I'm looking for, I'm new to the Valley, looking for somebody that does outboard motors. I've got an old antique 1957 Evinrude, yes.
Okay.
Outboard boat motor. You know, rebuilt on an antique boat. The thing's given me a little bit of trouble with, you know, once it gets heated up, it runs great on the lake, but getting it to the dock is a nightmare. The thing's stalled out.
All right.
I need somebody that really understands.
All right. I can tell you that you are up against a huge wall. A friend
you're
of mine.
You're up a creek without a paddle.
Yo, that,
or without a motor.
That's exactly right. This lady, Abby, we all know who it is. She
yes.
has a houseboat. What isn't? It isn't Abby. Give me a first name. Nevertheless, lady has a houseboat with two outboard motor up at Lake Pleasant. Pleasant or Bartlett,
yep.
one or the other.
Bartlett, you're right.
And Eddie and I, we hunted days and weeks for her to try to find somebody that would go out there and diagnose it. We finally found one guy who went out there, and he determined, and it has three carburetors on it. It has
yes.
top, middle, by it's a six cylinder. And he didn't know which carburetor it was, and there was kits and the cost, and then there was rebuilt ones, but they weren't real dependable. And I don't really know what happened at the end of the day, but I want to tell you something. We have both learned that you're in big trouble. I think what I would do is I'd start by calling some of the marinas at some of the lakes, Swirl, Bartlett, Pleasant, and call the marinas and say, who does good outboard work? Then you call that person and you say, what can I do to help you? Will you come to my house? I'll get a 55-gallon barrel. I'll put water in it. But if you have to bring the RPMs up and you got to put it on a boat to make it happen, then you're going to have to put it on a boat and you're going to have to go to his marina where he works all the time. Otherwise, they're going to charge you hundreds of dollars of travel time. And then when they get there, they tell you they can't fix it. You still owe them for the travel time. So that's the best I can offer you. I spent hours on the phone and searching on Google, outboard motor repair, Phoenix, Arizona, all kinds of stuff. And here's what they all told me, too. We are so busy, we don't have time for the one-off kind of customer. I can do lots of work at the lake every day, working on motors and boats and stuff like that. So I don't have to go much places. So that's the best I can offer you. I'm sorry. That's the best I can offer you. If anybody else has an outboard motor guy that does travel or will go to a house, I mean, I don't know that I'd put it in the swimming pool. I think that's a bad idea.
I had not thought of that. That's not a bad idea.
No, please don't do that. And people would say, Mark said it was okay. Anyway, you know what else? I would like you to share with us if you find somebody. I would really like to have that information.
I absolutely will.
Okay.
And really, I can trail with this thing anywhere to anybody. I just, you know, you take the thing out three times a year and it does. Money's not an object. I just want it to work every time, or it ruins the vacation.
Well, I wouldn't start the conversation with the repair guy that money is not an object.
Yeah. Forget that. Hey, Steve, something else too is you might ask him, do you have a boat, a 14-foot aluminum boat, or do you have something we can strap this to? All it needs is a doggone fuel supply. And a strong transom. But he's not going to put a 215-horsepower Evinrude on a 14-foot aluminum boat, but it's worth asking. I will bring you the motor. Do you have something you can put it on and you can test it with? And he's going to charge you to mount and unmount the motor, but what else?
Yeah. Well, you and I, we both own
boats.
Well,
really, he could take the boat. I don't care.
Yeah.
I just want it back and you know,
okay.
It works.
Mark and I have both owned boats, and what's the happiest day of a boat owner's life?
When you sell it.
When you buy it, when you sell it.
Yeah.
I may have a contact with an outboard. I just shot him a text. I got a buddy who owns a Mastercraft dealership.
Okay.
But I don't know if they have any outboard guys, but I just texted them, so we'll see.
All right. And if they do, here's the deal. Give me your email address.
Alan, Alan, Salem at AOL.com.
Alan Salem, A-L-A-N, Salem like the cigarette, at AOL.com.
So you don't want to use the Gmail one?
Shoot him. Shut up, you guys. shoot him an email, and he'll put you in touch with his outboard guy. Oh, God. You opened that door. I almost jumped through it. All righty. For Harry, you stay right there. What's the possibility that God put me in the position that Harry is our next caller? Just leave it alone.
Well, he knows.
Leave it alone. We'll be right back right after this.
From under my hood.
Oh, you know what? If you were in this radio studio during the breaks, you would be rolling on the floor because we are misbehaving like there's no tomorrow. Real quick, before I take care, let me tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil's been around since 1968. He was actually one of the very first people off of the Mayflower, and he's been around working on transmissions ever since. He's at 40th Street in Washington. The name of the company is Automatic Transmission Exchange. We call it ATE, and he's been around the block a few times. He's got hair that looks on the little of, what color do they call that, Alan? A little on the chrome side, you said?
Chrome.
Okay, chrome. Or what's the other color, is it?
Platinum.
Platinum. Chrome or platinum. Phil's got a little chrome or a little platinum in his hair. Nevertheless, in those of you in Phoenix, if you have a transmission problem, then maybe swing by Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, and ask Phil if he would let one of his guys take you for a ride or go with you for a ride so that you could demonstrate the problem. That's the key, is the driver, the owner of the car, is demonstrating the problem to a technician who's well-seasoned. All righty, let's go to Harry. Harry, how are you, buddy?
Just fine. How are you, Mark?
I'm
good. A little bit worried the way you were laughing when you went off the commercial break when you mentioned my name.
We discussed this in the break.
Yeah.
If he dies in this chair, I don't know how to work that board, and I'm not giving them CPR, so I don't know what the hell is going on.
I'll grab a shop air hose.
Yeah. I'm telling you what, Harry, it's what's going on behind the scenes is certainly to get me fired. I have to make sure that their mics are off the minute we go off the air so that it doesn't turn ugly. I want to tell you guys something about Harry for you. We had a Secret Santa Club, and we talked about it on the radio, and Harry brought us a can of refrigerant. Of the R12 variety.
A tank,
a 30-pound container. And, Harry, do you have an idea what the transition on the money was?
No, I don't. Okay. In fact, I was kind of wondering if it was, Alan's there, and that's came out and picked it up. I didn't know if
I'm trying
it had
to get
a leak or anything like that, but no, it was sealed.
No. I'm trying to get a hold of him right now.
Okay,
to find out.
We thought it might be you, Harry, and we're trying to get a hold of Andy because she's the one that handled that transaction. But Jeff weighed it, and it was 30 pounds, so it wasn't a leaking thing. And Harry, I'm going to tell you, they're going to send you a receipt anyway. Because we do that for everybody, but I'm thinking it was $800 or $900.
Wow.
And that we involved Jeff in the parts department, and we looked at our average cost. We carry forward an average cost of R12, and so I think at that point we were giving you what our average cost was because we bought your tank from you, and then we gave you the money, and you turned around and gave it to us. But I'll tell you what we did on Secret Santa this year too, Harry. One of the it made us feel good. One of the things that is we found a bunch of older ladies who had no family in rest homes. And so the girls went and visited the ladies, and they bought stuff for the ladies, slippers and blouses, and they arranged to have their hair fixed and their fingernails done. A lot of them wanted stuffed animals, teddy bears and stuff like that. So it was real, what's the word I'm looking for?
Heartwarming.
Heartwarming, and it made the
fulfilling.
Lady. Fulfilling is another word. It's unfortunate, we always invite people to help us with that, but they get a real, it makes you feel good for a day and a week and a month to take care of someone who has no family, and that's kind of the focus we have. We also involve some churches, and we helped them out with some families that needed to be helped, but Andy and Renee handle that, so you'll be getting some information. But the answer to your question is I'm pretty sure we were in the $750 to $1,000 range.
Wow.
for that tank, and that's what you'll get credit for.
Boy, that went up better than gold.
Yeah. How much did you pay for that? Do you remember?
Oh, gosh, I know. I think I bought it over at Costco, maybe, seems like it was the early 90s.
It was probably 20 years ago, for sure.
$40, $50 yeah. bucks, somewhere around there.
No,
at that time, I had two vehicles that had R12, and I was kind of, you know, dabbling with it. Had, you know, I could do a little repair on it. I thought, well, I need a big jug of this because of the one-pound cans, you know.
Yeah. Can you guess what Harry did for a living?
Me?
Yeah. I mean, just by his voice. What comes to mind?
No, I have no clue.
Public servant. I'm going to spot you that. Public servant, cop,
possibly
fireman,
sheriff.
Sheriff, yeah. He has a 30-pound container in his house. If it's punctured, it's like a missile, and it's somewhat flammable. And he's a fireman. Oh, we're just teasing you this morning.
But I had it tucked away in a real good spot.
So. Oh, a fireproof file cabinet.
Yes, exactly. No damage.
And how many years did you, which end of the hose were you on, the hookup end or the spraying end?
Well, kind of both through my career. And ended up, actually working on a ladder and pumper and, you know, as far as that goes. I worked on almost all the trucks.
Did you ever drive
the... I was an engineer. I drove.
Okay.
I drove trucks.
All right. Did you ever drive the back end of a ladder truck?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, tiller. Yeah.
Yeah. And so...
I was on a tiller ladder.
Does the steering work the same as the front steering wheel, or is it opposite, or how does it work?
Well, you got to kind of... Of course, they got so big. I mean, the ladders, when I first started, I mean, you know, were... You have fairly decent visibility, and they got so big, and then they became enclosed, and... You know, you had a intercom. You had to basically talk to the guy in the front. He would kind of let you know what was coming up because you have, you know, so many blind spots. You go out and of course you practice and everything, and you have your driver training. But
could we run that truck through a snail's track? You know, with cones and stuff like that, where it was pretty tight left and right turns at slow speed. Would those guys be skilled enough to make that, or would they run over?
They practice, and of course, obviously you have to, do that for your to get your certification and to, you know, be an engineer.
I'll tell you what I think about firemen. I used to, as a policeman, used to go to the firehouse to go to the bathroom because that's a place you could do it privately. Plus, you had to hang your gun belt on the back of the door. I can't tell you how many times I'm sitting there, and I'm on what we call a break. And all of a sudden, I hear something that sounds like someone lighting a match and then having a huge firecracker roll underneath the partition between my legs.
I could hardly believe they would do that.
And the only thing I could do was put my hands over my ears. There was no moving or running because my pants are around my ankles. And so I just want to tell you those are memories that have been embedded in my mind for years.
Well, that was a greeting. I mean, you know.
I can tell you I wouldn't be covering my ears. I can promise you that.
Well, and I will tell you this. We used to get even with them because back then they would slide down the pole and slip into their boots, and we'd put eggs in their boots, and we'd take a dog crap, and we'd go to the park and get geese trap, goose trap, and all that stuff. We used to play with them, and then we'd pull in the middle of the night, and there was a guy named Jeff that could mimic the sound perfectly, the bee-doo-boo-doo, and he'd get on his loudspeaker, and he could mimic that perfectly. They'd all come running down, get in their fire trucks, and then we'd drive away. And then you'd be in an accident.
Paybacks, you know that.
Oh, you're in an accident scene. Yeah, and back then it was RFD. They'd pull up to the scene, and they need to hose off something off the intersection. Inevitably, if you were directing traffic, you were soaked to the bone by the time they were done. And they didn't even care that you were carrying a gun. They didn't even care. Anyway, Harry, if you got
times have changed.
Yes, they have. You got to get your question to me, but I want to take a break.
Okay, sounds good.
All righty, so you stay right there, and we'll get right to you on the other side of the break. We've got four lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. So you wouldn't be covering your ears.
No.
That's a funny picture. I was covering my ears because a lot of times they were like M80s.
Well, that explains a lot.
Yeah. as my son, he thinks he's funny. That explains a lot. Anyway, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, then you're more than welcome to tell us. But also, I think, too, there's a lot of men that listen to the show. And if a lady has a really nifty gift that she got from her husband and she wants to share for the rest of us that have not yet shopped for our wives, then that would be a good call as well. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Mark Salem, Eddie Caruso, and Alan Salem all here. I'm giving your last names in case they want to chew on anybody's tail end. They know exactly who to ask for.
Okay.
All right. All righty. First of all, let me tell you about S&S Tire Service. S&S kind of handles the West Valley. They're really good at what they do. They have shops in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have a very comprehensive line of tires, so you can go in, they'll take your size, and they'll give you three prices, good, better, best. You can decide what's good for you. And the tire prices are out the door, so you can write the check before you leave home, and when you come down, that's how much it's going to be. So if you're looking at tires or anything from wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between, or alignment work, front-end work, vibration, stuff like that, then S&S Tire on the West Side is a great place to go. Harry, you had a question before we started getting off on that tangent, so go ahead with a question.
Okay, yeah, this is kind of for Alan, and, you know, since he's a diesel guy, I was wondering on these diesels that they have in the Nissan, and I think the Ram trucks, Alan, too, it's a smaller V8 diesel, and I don't know if he's had an occasion to come in contact with those or do any work on them.
You know,
how they're working out, or are they any good, or what's the story on them?
I haven't seen many of the Titan. Well, I haven't seen any of the Titan diesels yet, the little Cummins Titan, nor have I seen any of the Dodge 1500, but I can tell you that I've got some customers with the Dodge 1500 diesel, and they are very, very pleased with them. Getting really good miles per gallon. The number I'm hearing is about 30 around town on those diesels. So,
but it's kind of early. It's kind of early because the 6.0 was a beautiful motor before, you know, it fell into the toilet.
Yeah, but it didn't say Cummins on it, though, either.
No, I agree. But it's you got to be a little hesitant.
Yeah, well, and what I was going to say was I would never buy the first year of anything because they seem to always use those people to work out the bugs. But, I mean, if I had my choice between the Dodge or the Titan, I would definitely do the Dodge, the 1500. But other than that, I don't have much to offer on, you know, stuff like that.
I think the point is that it has Cummins on it, and we are very comfortable with Cummins.
The 1500 is a Cummins?
The Dodge is not, actually. I think the Dodge is a Blue Tech, or I can't remember what the name of it is. But I know that the Titan is. But I know that the Dodge one's been out longer. So that's why I would say I would go with the Dodge one just because it's been out longer and it gets real good mileage.
And there isn't Chevrolet going to come out with a small diesel?
They just came out with the Duramax. I think it's a 2.5 liter in their Colorados. Okay. Again, first or second year. I had one in the shop the other day. They were just picking something up. And it sounds cool in a little, you know, S10 size truck. But yeah. I don't know much about those either.
A 2.5 is obviously an inline four-cylinder. Could it be a V6?
It could be a five-cylinder.
Five-cylinder. I don't know for sure
what
it is. But I haven't seen one. But, yeah, it's everything's going to go to that.
All righty. Listen, Harry, thank you very much. Good luck to you, buddy. Tony, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hey, this is more of a general question. I have an 07 Toyota Tacoma pre-runner with 114,000 miles, and I got to say it's been a fabulous vehicle. Here's the thing: I pulled my boat with it. It's not a huge boat; it's a less than 2,000 pound single axle trailer. And you know, you get to the point. I'm just kind of curious: when are you spending more on repairs? Right now, I really have no major issues. It just seems like every year I put $1,000 or $1,200 into something.
Okay, I can answer that question for you real easy.
Go ahead.
You have to pay for the 100 that somebody already put on that. So between 90 and after that, hoses, belts, fluids, tires, shocks, brakes, everything kind of comes due. But the good news is I think you'll probably agree that that Tacoma was really clean and didn't consume money like an Eldorado consumes gas up until about 75 or 80,000 miles. So you got to go around the world three times pretty much on everything that was there. And then you got to pay the piper.
I bought it brand new. I've had it. I love it. I mean, I still have it. But, I, you know, like, for instance, this year it needed wheel bearings. Almost $1,000 for that. And I take it to a nationwide tire thing that they take care of it for
okay.
me. Because my wife's car is a company vehicle. I got used to going there for their service. And I've maintained it the whole time. You know, is it $150,000, $170,000, is it $120,000?
No,
it used to be, for me, $100,000 it was time to get rid of them.
Okay,
but
no.
Damn, they're, you know, new trucks are $50,000, $60,000.
I know, but here's the deal. The deal is we can fix anything you got on that for the sales tax and license plates of a new vehicle. We can put a motor in your truck for the sales tax and license of a new vehicle, almost. So the idea is you got to pay where you came from. So after you get past this 140 and you get up to 120, you've pretty much got everything covered, and then between 120 and 200 should be fine. Here's the answer to your question. The engine's going to go bad when you run it low on oil or you overheat it, or about 300,000 miles when it starts consuming oil.
That's about right.
Okay? So most of the engines we replace are self-inflicted wounds. They ran them low on oil, or they ran them and they overheated them and they wanted to drive that extra mile home. So if you don't overheat it, you don't run it over on oil, then the next thing that happens is oil consumption, which manifests itself to a fouled spark plug, and then that's when you have to make a decision. When it starts consuming so much oil that it's blowing blue smoke and fouling spark plugs, then the end is very near. All righty? All righty. Good luck to you, Tony. Chris, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, I'm going back to my ute here, and I grew up on the water back in New Jersey. A little town called Tom's River. And when he was talking about that 57 Avenue that he had that was on earlier.
Yes, sir.
I literally, the vision of that entire engine just came right into my head. Because I know them. I used to look, people would throw them away. After a while, they'd use them for a number of years, and then they'd start missing or something, and they'd throw them away. And so I would go around picking them up. Because one of the most common things that happens to them is, and at low speed, they'll stall out. And it's because they have a magneto underneath the flywheel. And the magneto kind of, it's a phenolic, okay, sort of like a plastic type of thing.
Yeah.
It usually winds up cracking and leaking. I guess it leaks juice, you know, whatever. And I would just replace the magnetos.
Okay.
Put them back together, and boom, keep running going.
All right.
And those engines, those Evans, they were always basically the same engine from 25 horsepower 18 horsepower, well, 25 at 57 was probably the big engine that they made.
All right. Now, if Steve's listening, do you want to raise your hand and look at it with the promise of I'll just look at it and give you good advice? Or are you retired and is your wife yelling right now, don't you dare, I'll kill you?
She'd probably kill me. But that I used to do. I did so many of them. Probably a couple of dozen.
All right. Okay, I'm going to help you with this. I'm going to help you with this, okay? Hey,
yeah,
Steve.
Yeah.
Steve, I got Chris here. He's got hundreds of hours, if not thousands of hours of experience. Depending on where you leave, he's hoping that it'll be worth $75 to $125 to have him come over. He's probably got the skills necessary. If you can stick that in a 55-gallon drum or get maybe one of those earmuffs on the motor where you can run it on the boat with a garden hose, then I'm thinking, depending on how far he has to drive, probably all the way there and look at the thing, $75 to $125. Are you with me, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Steve, now all he needs is your phone number. Can you give that?
I don't think I'd attract too much attention.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. How about an email address?
I think it'd be easier to give him my phone number.
Okay. Give it to me once.
Okay. Yeah, it's 602.
Okay.
708.
Okay.
2430.
Now, he's not raising his hand to work on every boat in the city. He's talking specifically with Steve with his 57 outboard Evinrude.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so don't call Chris and say, can you stop by and take care of my Johnson?
No, this is a one-off
Justin
deal.
And Evinrude, Justin and Evinrude were the same engine. They just had a different cover.
Now, see, you just screwed it up. I'm focusing you on an Evinrude. I don't need to hear that. Oh, the Johnson, the Evinrude, just say you. If you get a million calls, it's your fault. Now it's not mine. Right. I'm trying to get you out of working on the Johnson. Okay. Right. All righty. Thank you very much, Chris. Thank you.
All right.
We're going to take a break, and then we're going to take Phil. Phil, you stay right there. We'll be back right after this. Oh, my goodness. I don't know that I've laughed so hard in all my life. Calm down. Did you have a comment you want? We were talking about boat motors and Evinrudes, and then he throws in that.
And the different makes, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you had a comment.
Alan had a request.
I would not.
And he just said,
for the record.
Hey, go ahead.
Who was the guy with the motor?
Steve.
Steve.
Yeah.
No, the guy that.
The Evinrude, Chris.
Chris. Yeah.
He said, "Hey, Chris."
Yeah. Hey, Chris. You know, Alan had a request. You know, tongue in cheek, at the risk of being Evinrude, could you teach my wife to work on a Johnson?
I can't believe you said it.
Oh, God.
We are talking motor, so it's okay.
We are. Hey, we're talking a couple of mechanics talking.
Evinrude, Johnson, Mercury.
Yeah, he said an Evinrude and a Johnson were the same. Okay, we're going to go to Phil like we said we were. Phil, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, I've got a 2006 Jeep Commander. Love it. It's a tank. It's got 120,000 on it. But since I bought it, and I bought it with 6 miles on it, the service four-wheel drive indicator has come on. It's been intermittent. They've changed the sensor. They've changed the fuse. It's happening again. What should I be looking at?
Well, I'm pretty sure Eddie and I are going to kind of talk out loud right now. I'm pretty sure this is an on-off switch, don't you think?
Right, but there's got to be, I mean, first we need to kind of develop a scenario. When does it happen? Is it hot, cold? Is it when it rains? You know, what is there? Can you pinpoint it down to any real
time, place, scenario?
No, I'll start it in the morning. It may not be on. I'll drive it. It'll be on. It'll turn off. The next day I'll turn it on. It's on. It's truly intermittent.
Okay.
There is no reason.
The reason why we're asking that question is if you said rain, if you said something like that, then we would be looking outside of the switch. We'd be looking between the switch and the light, the bulb. But if it only happens when it's hot, or only happens when it's cold, or it only happens when you make a hard right turn or whatever, really and truly, this is going to be a switch that has power and ground, okay? And it's probably got power to it, and it interrupts the ground. So when the switch, it's not in four-wheel drive, the switch opens the ground circuit, which doesn't illuminate the light. So the fact that it's coming off and going on indicates the switch is being told something after all the switches that you've had done there. So, right?
Yeah, but it's not, I don't think that it's showing that the four-wheel drive is on. I don't know if this is a part-time transfer case for a full-time or how that system works. But I would think most likely it's going to be an electronic shifted transfer case. So there should be a transfer case control module.
Okay.
So I would think that with a scanner, you could go in and access that module and just see if there's any history codes and look at the data and see does it all jive.
Okay. And you're right. You're absolutely right. That would be something that we could do on an 06 because this is at least going to be OBD1 or OBD2.
Yeah, it's OBD2 for sure.
Okay. So we could go in and look. But what's the chances 12 years later that this is really going to have bi-directional communication where we can make things happen? Is that possible?
Oh, very possible. Oh, yes.
06. Okay. All right. So if that's the case, what part of town do you live in, Phil?
I'm down in Castor Grande.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll do this. We're off Warner Road and I-10 1 mile east. Got a pencil handy?
Yes, I do.
Okay. 480-598-1234. And you're going to make an appointment to visit with Eddie, and Eddie's going to give you a half an hour's worth of his time for free, And if Andy, my daughter, has issues with that, have her call me. And what you're going to do is scan it. Okay,
right.
You're going to go drive it. You're going to go scan it. You're going to put it in four-wheel drive, take it out of four-wheel drive. You're going to do all the stuff and exercise it to try to come to some kind of an idea. So I'm giving him a half an hour's worth of diagnostic time, and you take care of it. Just write a ticket up and just say per mark. Okay?
No problem.
All righty, so we'll do that for you, and because it's nothing we've ever seen before, and this might very well be something that we can fix with the technology that we presently have and the brain trust that we have out in the shop. Okay?
Outstanding. Thank you.
All right. Good enough. 6025.
Judy is your next caller. Judy.
Oh, gosh. Well, before we go to Judy, hey, Gil, is she mad at us?
No, I haven't spoken with her.
Okay. Judy, good morning. What kind of a car problem do you have?
Okay. I have a 2001 Ford Expedition.
Oh, thank God.
When I came from the East Coast about 5 weeks ago, of course, it was dead. I started the battery. And it was fine. It ran for 3 weeks, no problem. Just this past week, after having run it all day, I came out and went to start it. And there was like a clicking sound.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, the lights went across the dash, and they were all blinking. And the needle was moving back and forth. It looked like the car was haunted.
Okay.
And so then it went dead. And so I tried it a couple of times after that, and it was dead, nothing.
Okay,
so
okay.
So then I found somebody.
Go ahead.
I found somebody to jump start me, and then when we came back to the car, the car started fine.
Okay.
And so it's been fine for the 2 days after that.
Okay,
but
okay.
I'm thinking something has to be wrong.
Okay. We're all sitting here shaking our heads because you've given us some information that you don't know how important it is. Eddie, what would you bet odds-wise or on a 1 to 10 scale that you could probably diagnose this over the phone?
Eight.
And I'm thinking 8 or 9. Absolutely. You're describing a bad battery connection problem.
That's what it sounds like.
And what you talk about, the lights going on and off and stuff like that and the bars moving and all that kind of stuff, that is classic. And then you've got the clicking noise, which is low voltage. So right. Instead, we want 9.6 volts to the starter, and you have less than 9.6, and then all of a sudden it starts up later. So if let me also tell you this, Judy, what is the cost to bring somebody in and do an electrical systems check on something like this, where you check the battery, the alternator, the cables, the regulator, you check shorts and draws and all that kind of stuff?
I think that's $35, something
$35, like that. $35, $38, $40, somewhere around in there. That's what an electrical systems analysis would cost. And as long as the guy in front of you has gray hair and been around the block a couple of times, that's all that really needs to be done. The three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store wouldn't know a 8.6 volt range from, you know, anything else in the world. But if you have a good garage, I think what you told him about the dashboard and the clicking will send them down the path. Do you remember who you bought the battery from?
No, I'm not sure who we bought it from. It might be in the car, but I'm not positive.
Okay. Well, if you looked at the top and it had a label on it, you might ask someone in your neighborhood, what shop in your neighborhood, do you service Delco batteries or Interstate batteries or whoever it happens to be? And would you take a look at the connections on my car? Here, I'll give you something else. If you go to marksalem.com, marksalem.com, and I want you to go to the FAQs, and I want you to print out FAQ number 28. It talks about how you can use your headlights to diagnose the problem. Because if you turn on the key and you turn on the headlights and they're white and bright and you're parked up against your garage door or inside your garage where you can see the headlights off the wall in front of you, and you hit the key and the headlights go out to nothing and then they come back on slowly to white and bright, that's a classic example of a bad battery connection. So if you would look at that at FAQ 28, that would be, and print that. And if
so that was marksalem.com?
Yes, ma'am. Mark with a K, Salem like the cigarette.com. Click on the FAQ link and then click on FAQ 28 and print that. I promise you, if you follow that, you'll be able to tell the shop what you found and they'll know exactly what to do. Okay? All righty. Go ahead.
Somebody backed into me and broke the taillight. No damage to the car at all. Just the, I need a light replacement in the back, the tail light, the red light.
Uh-huh.
You know, how much do you think that might cost me?
Well, it's an entire assembly. So it's going to be the whole tail light and the reflector and the bulb holder and all that other kind of stuff. You want to throw a guess at that?
Well, you can go through Aftermarkets, which is TYC, which sells headlight and tail light assemblies, or go to the dealer and get a factory one.
Okay.
It's the majority of the cost is going to be in the assembly itself. It takes 10 minutes to change out.
Don't say 10 minutes. It takes a seasoned technician 10 to 20 minutes, but the range is from 15 to 30 minutes. Okay, we're going to cover everybody here. You're going to get us in trouble. And anyway, and do you have a shop that
really
you normally...
Did you say he's going to get him in trouble?
Really? Well, this is my last show. Everybody's made that pretty clear. This
of
is
the year.
Of the year, maybe. Judy, do you have a garage that you normally do business with?
Not really.
Okay, what part of town
kind of
are you in?
Around.
Okay, what part of town are you in?
Scottsdale.
Okay,
Scottsdale, east part of Phoenix. Yeah.
Okay, are you north of Indian Bend or south of Indian Bend?
North.
Okay, I would take it over to Nadine, and she owns Air Park Auto Service. And I would just say, Mark Salem said that you would give me an estimate to replace the taillight assembly in my car. Would you look at it and give me a written estimate on the back of one of your business cards? That's what I would do. Nadine is a very nice lady. Her husband passed away. She runs the store. She may or may not be there. But Air Park Auto, it's on Raintree just east of Hayden. And Raintree is about 4 or 5 blocks south of Frank Lloyd Wright Boulevard. I'm sure that they would do that for you for free. I'd give you an estimate for the replacement of the taillight assembly that's broken. All righty. Thank you, Judy.
Great.
Good luck to you, ma'am. And, this is my last show. I've been told by 20 people. And Steve, the outboard motor guy.
Yes. It sure sounds like Chris knows what he's talking about, but I did get another referral.
Okay.
If he can't hook up with Chris, so he can email me, like I said, alansalem@aol.com. And I can forward you that information.
Okay, so Steve, we've got two different things. Chris, we've got a phone number. And if you want to email me at mark@marksalem.com, I'll give you his phone number because I wrote it down. And if you email Alan, it's A-L-A-N, Salem, like the cigarette, at AOL.com. He'll give you another name. And you know what? You and I looked hard for somebody to help Donna up
right on that boat
and to just fix it. And I don't know if we ever accomplished that. She was so frazzled about that whole thing because she had spent a bunch of money have people guessing. So it was not only hard to find somebody that did outboard motors, but who was seasoned about that. Anyway, my name is Mark Salem. I want to make sure everybody knows who the guys are in trouble. Eddie Caruso is here, and Alan Salem, my son, is here. So if anybody has to blame anything, you can blame it on all three of us. But we'll be back next Saturday right here on KKNT, and we're going to be talking about car repair, we promise, with all the stupid jokes missing. So I'll see you next there. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. God bless you.